I'm plugged into the Agora's nexus. We need the whole community connected. We're the alternative collective. Self-sufficient and effective.
The Agoras Nexus Podcast. I'm Jeremiah, joined by Lily and her friend Marcus. And this should be a fairly good episode. We got a lot of ground to cover, lots of interesting stories, lots of personal stories of anarchy, and what it's like to be one in this situation. And they met at Anarchapulco. And so it should be an interesting conversation relating to that. As y'all know, we've made content on that before. But before we get into it, it's brought to you by Presearch, a decentralized, privacy-focused search engine that allows you to earn their in-house cryptocurrency from doing searches and that sort of thing. And you can also stake it for their in-house ads. And they do a variety of other things. You can even use like your normie tier search engines with Presearch, with their privacy features built in. And ultimately, it's designed to give you more of your privacy back and not to use ads or trackers that intrude on your traffic elsewhere. Just using the ads that people like, you know, use there. So with that being said, if you sign up with the link in the description, you support the site. So we really appreciate it when you do that. And also, it's brought to you by Agorist Acres Seeds. And you can use code NEXUS for 20% off your seed purchase so that you can start building your seed supply for the coming apocalypse and the coming government crackdowns, because as you all know from the last episode, which you can watch, which was an episode on Christian anarchy with Hody Johns, the state is becoming ever more fascist, ever closer to a crackdown, because they're trying to control the culture, they're trying to control us. And as to that, the guest we have today met because he's interested in stopping that sort of control. So he met Lily at Anarchapulco. And let's start with why you moved away from Mexico.
Well, actually, I wanted to start real quick. I wanted to know, because Marcus was actually pretty involved with Agoraforco, which we talked about pretty extensively. I want to know what his thoughts on his experiences with the fork were. Before we get into that.
Sure. Yeah, it's interesting because I basically started digging into this movement back in 2017, I guess. Yeah, that's when I heard for the first time about from Jeff Berwick. And I started following him, and it was an interesting journey. I consider myself basically an anarchist. I feel like I was born an anarchist ever since I was a kid. I remember like having trouble like following some orders that I consider stupid. You know, I live my life basically by the non-aggression principle, but I always struggle with authority. And so my impression of Agoraforco, I will say, it was an interesting one, a very interesting one, of course, because I got the opportunity to meet like-minded people. And I met Lily, and it was fascinating getting to know her. And unfortunately, I was not able to attend the main event in Acapulco. I basically arrived at the very end. But I'm glad that I still went this year because, this relationship was basically the result of that event. So my impression of Agoraforco, I will say it was top notch. I know this is the first year that it takes place, and I highly recommend everyone listening to this to give it a chance. I don't want to disclose too much information about that. We'll see about next year, but I highly recommend anyone listening to attend next year if possible.
All right. Well, so let's then get into why you left Mexico.
Sure. That was a decision that I made exactly 3 years ago. That was in June 2020, as everyone remembers. It was basically chaos around the whole planet, and I couldn't believe my eyes. And I was like, what is wrong with people? With like, I couldn't believe how people were just falling for this. Like, it was really hard for me to comprehend. And I was like, okay. I was one of the very few that didn't fall for this psyop. And I'll just say this, I was the only one in my family that didn't fall for this. And like my whole family, they took the jab. Even though I warned them, I'll give you this information. So like one of the main, my stepmother, she was the first one in my family, let's say my circle, to get the shot for the first time. She was the first one. And she just got the first shot of Pfizer, I believe. And she passed away 48 hours after that. So anyone with a half a brain will, yeah. So anyone with half a brain will say, well, wait a minute, this is fishy. Like how, like she was a healthy woman in her 40s. And like anyone with half a brain again will think about that. Like, okay, this is, there's something wrong with this. This is not normal. But no, actually my whole family took the jab after that event. And so like, I couldn't believe my eyes. I couldn't believe how people were just falling for this. And I developed over time a theory of why that happened. I'm pretty sure you are familiar with the saying, good times create weak men create hard times. It's a cycle, right? So like the last time we had a revolution in Mexico, it was over like 100 years ago. So people who are alive right now in Mexico, they don't remember. They've been living in peace for their whole lives. So they think it's okay to, that created, like, that sounds good on the surface, right? To have peace, but that created a weak generation. And so I believe that's the reason why people just decided to follow orders and believe the government. And, you know, unfortunately, very few people actually study history. And they don't understand that that is actually a pretty bad idea to, you know, to trust the government. That will never be a good idea. If you are a student of history, you will know that that's one of the worst things that you can do. So I was like caught in the middle of that chaos back in June 2020. And thanks to Jeff Berwick, I started to follow, to watch his videos regularly or on a daily basis, actually. And it was thanks to him that I discovered Serbia. I knew very little about that country. I knew it was in Europe, but pretty much that's all I knew. And I heard from Jeff is that people were going to the streets to fight the cops, basically to fight against the lockdown and everything. And I say to myself, okay, that's my kind of people, because I was trying to do exactly the same thing in Mexico. I was trying to wake up people. I was like giving people like pamphlets, you know, with information about like, just trying to do whatever I can to wake up people. I was going to the supermarket with a face mask because that was the only way to buy my groceries. But on the face mask, I wrote, COVID is a scam, basically, in Spanish. And, you know, I was fighting with the security all the time because I was not wearing my mask properly, you know. And I was just tired of that. After just a couple of weeks, I just couldn't take it anymore. So I heard about Serbia, people going to the streets to fight the cops. And I was like, okay, that's all I need to know for now. And not only that, but back in those days, it was one of the very few countries that was open because pretty much everything was closed. And so that's the only, that was basically the basis for me taking that decision. And yeah, that was the start of this journey in this country. That is far from perfect, but I can say it is by far way better than Mexico, and I would say most countries in terms of freedom.
Well, and just to be clear, because here's the thing. I'm a cynical, pessimistic, you know, conspiracy asshole, and I've been this way for, you know, basically ever. And one of the things that I'll say is that, like, that's not peace. If people are so fundamentally co-opted that they think it's totally acceptable to force people onto a jab or anything else, really, that's not peace. It's just an undercurrent of violence under the system. And to me, Mexico, due to like the Western hegemony and the like sort of interference like that runs back to the Spanish like conquistadors and shit. To me, Mexico has never been at peace, and the like we need insurrection, not revolution, in a lot of places. Because revolution is just going to cause yet another revolution in 100 years. If people actually woke up enough to realize that, like, the system is the problem and that the system is a problem to begin with, that's what's going to, like, propel us. And a lot of people aren't willing to recognize that because the system, which is fundamentally violent, has indoctrinated them and inculcated them into the cult of statism from a very young age. And like the system itself, like there will be no peace while these people are in charge, while these, like, you know, murderers, rapists, like these people that like created the violence that people protest to begin with. But like the common person is partaking in that violence when they try to coerce people into like following their orders by doing things like the COVID jab. When they try to tell people that you can't enter our store without a mask, that's not peace. That's participating in the systemic violence. So to me, like Mexico, due to like its involvement in global trade and its like acquiescence to the system, is probably just as violent as ever. It's just got a friendly face and a trademark symbol on it.
Yeah. Well, yeah, Mexico, you know, like, what can I tell you? It's a country that I live pretty much my whole life there. I live like for over 28 years there. It is a country that, again, it's like we didn't have any kind of war in the past or revolution for the past 100 years. Yeah. But, you know, yeah, we do a lot of trading with the U.S. And unfortunately, we are copying a lot of the bad things that are going on in the U.S. right now. Like all these LGBT, like no offense to gay people, but like we are adopting a lot of that in a lot of that woke culture in Mexico, I will say. Well, so yeah,
I don't have a problem with that at all. So
yeah. Yeah. So we're basically getting influenced by the US in a negative way, I will say. But yeah.
Not even that, but you gotta consider like, yeah, no war, the revolutions, but what about all of the cartel bullshit? Which that I think is a bigger problem, and which Mexico, like, and the U.S. interact, because, like, it's those systems are pretty much identical in terms of the gangs and the cartel culture and the, you know, extortion culture and all of that. I think that is the bigger problem, especially as far as hurting people is concerned.
Yeah, well, I will say I can comment on that. Based on my experience of 28 years living there, I can say that, yes, that is a problem. Yes, that definitely it's not like super high quality of life compared to most countries in Europe, let's say. But I have to agree with Jeff Berwick, which I don't necessarily agree with everything that he says, especially every time he talks about how people in Mexico are basically against the government. I strongly disagree with that. That is not the case at all. But I can agree with him in the sense that the cartel thing, which is basically, in my opinion, propaganda from the mainstream media, it's going to be a problem for you if you're a drug dealer. Yeah, if you're a drug dealer and you're trying to start a drug dealer business in Mexico, there's a high chance they will chop your head. Yeah, but if you're not in that business, I don't think there's a reason for you to be concerned. Yes, if you run a business, there's also the probability if you live in a dangerous area, because there's safe areas in Mexico and dangerous areas, just like in most countries. There is a chance that they may come, the cartel may come to you and ask you for a, they call it a quota, basically. They want you to pay them like an extortion so they can give you protection in exchange. Of course, I don't support that. That is a problem. But, you know, that's the current state of the country. Yeah.
Were you going to say something, Lily?
No, I was just going to mention, because he mentioned the drugs, and I was like, well, you know, businesses. But he's right. It's generally in dangerous areas or areas that are high tourist, which subsequently tend to be dangerous, where the cartel shows up and is like, you're going to give me a cut of your tortilla profits or else. And I'm using that example because I do know somebody in Acapulco. I knew somebody in Acapulco who got killed for having too successful of a tortilla business in the wrong area. And then, of course, there's, you know, the avocado farmers and stuff in Michoacan and the fact that they have to pay extortion to exist. And
oh, yeah, that is
industry.
Mafia.
Yeah.
Yeah, that is a mafia. I know this because I have family in that state, and I know for a fact that people who run like large avocado like farms, let's say, or ranches, it's a mafia. It's if you try to become like their competition, it's gonna be like a mafia thing. They will go after you, and so not a good idea. Not recommended.
But like that's sort of part of the thing is that like getting used to violence. You know, is so just saying like, don't go there. That kind of like one blocks off huge chunks of the country if you do that, because these people control like states and not just blocks. But it also means that like per capita, like per square mile, there's probably going to be more like cartel controlled like territory in Mexico in that sort of violent way than there would be in the S, like in the US by percentage, by like a wide margin. And just to, you know, put a fine point on the point earlier, there you're worried about cartels, you're worried about maybe the cops, you're worried about like people who could enact violence on you. Those are the real practical concerns. There is no state that you have to stay out of because of the overwhelming LGBT presence. Woke isn't really a problem.
Yeah, that is what that is.
But like, just to be like, because the thing is, like, if you were telling somebody to go move to Mexico for one reason or another, you probably wouldn't at this point because of the COVID stuff, right? But like to be
well, our COVID stuff has kind of shifted. As somebody who currently lives in Mexico, like there's no more mask regulations, people aren't pushing vaccines. It did go a lot farther here than I ever expected it would, but like it's not necessarily the situation that it was. Like I haven't worn a mask in over a year, so
for now, for sure. Yeah. But like,
yeah, for now. Exactly.
Like they'll find another excuse.
Oh, yeah. They're working on that, unfortunately.
So like that's the thing. It's like a people that are easy to control, because they like were inculcated into the cult of statism and they believe what they're told by the government. Those people that are easy to control are going to be easy to control again. It's not going to, yeah. And that's the thing. We need a culture that is willing to stand up to like the state and the like millennia old cultural norms. So that's why, you know, I'm one among many reasons I'm okay with a variety of different cultural subversions in a variety of different ways to put it away.
Indeed.
But
on the same note, I wanted to ask, because Marcus and I have talked a little bit about what it was like when he got to Serbia, but I figured I would ask here, you know, you went to Serbia because they were, you know, fighting the police. Like, what was it actually like when you got there, and how long did the, you know, lockdown, masky restrictions actually last, and how far did the vaccination thing go? Because obviously some people got it, some people followed, but...
Yes. In there was also a vaccination program here, and of course people fell for that. But I remember the first day that I came here. I came here. I arrived during the night, and so I remember the next morning. I knew people were fighting the cops when I arrived, and I remember the next morning. I just went to look for something for breakfast, and I remember seeing people with wounds on their head because they were just fighting the cops the previous night. And so, like, here's the thing. I believe the reason why Serbia behave in such a different way than Mexico, it's because we're in a different stage of the cycle. Weak men create hard times create strong men creates good times. And Serbia, unlike Mexico, had a revolution, not a revolution, but had a war in the 90s. So people my age remember being bombed by NATO. They remember. And so they learned the hard way not to trust the government. They're in a completely different stage of the cycle than the West, or Mexico in this case. And that's the reason why I believe, that's in my opinion, the main reason why they behave the way that they behave. And it's interesting. Another thing that listeners may find interesting is Serbia, I believe they rank number 3 in the world by cancer, lung cancer. They smoke, like, it's unbelievable. It's hard to comprehend how much they smoke. They smoke. I've seen a pregnant woman smoking. And I know this because I remember I attended a wedding not long ago, and I remember seeing the groom dancing with the bride, and this guy he was holding a cigar as he was dancing. Like, imagine, they basically they're lighting another cigarette without finishing the one that they currently have in their hand. It's insane. It's insanity. So the reason why I'm saying this is because, how can you scare a culture? How can you scare people from something that may kill them when they don't give a fuck about that in the first place? You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And that, I find that very interesting about these people. They care mostly about living the moment and enjoying the present. And it's basically impossible to scare them. They were under the Ottoman Empire, occupied under the Ottoman Empire for 500 years. So they know what it's like to be a slave. And that is exactly the last thing that they want. They will fight to the death before they have any kind of enslavement. And I really appreciate that. And that's why I have my ships in this country. I'm betting on the people, because I'm pretty sure this is not over. Like, we have a break right now. I'm starting to learn about numerology and astrology because I believe it's one of the best tools that we can have, because I'm telling you, the people who rule the world, they use numerology and astrology to do all these things. Just think about 9/11 and how all the 11s involved in that. And so I'm betting on Serbians, because I believe right now we are in the year of the rabbit in the Chinese zodiac, and rabbits are associated with peace. It's so funny how we basically had some peace this year, and because last year COVID was still going on in most countries. So I believe we have a break right now, but I don't think this is over. I think they will come with something new next year, 2025. And I expect this thing to continue, like, for another 2 years. We will see. Maybe it will be named differently, but we'll see what happens. But the reason why I'm saying this is because, again, regardless of what kind of a tie they're going to throw at us, I believe the people, it's the most important element right now. And that's why I'm betting on Serbians, because they will behave pretty much the same, most of them.
Gotcha.
Yeah, it makes sense.
You going to say something, Lily?
No, I was just going to move on to the next point, because, like, you know, going to Serbia, like, most people, like myself included, like, I had to look up Serbia to see where in the world it is. I don't know anything about what it takes to live there. You know, a lot of, like, people in our community, they have a vague idea of, like, how to, for example, get residency in Mexico and other places. But Serbia is relatively unknown. That's one of the big things I wanted to talk about with this is, like, what is the residency process like and the citizenship thing you know, like, how does one go about bridging that gap to, because, like, I am, you know, the shining example of it's not fun to live legally in another country. So, like, how does one live legally in Serbia?
Sure. So I can say that I was pleased to discover that the residence process, it's pretty much straightforward. It's very straightforward. Fortunately, you basically need just 4 documents. So there's different ways to get your residence. So you can get your residence as a student if you want to study here. You can get married. You can get a residence through marriage, or living in common law. If that also applies, you can get a residence as, you know, if a company wants to hire you, you can also get a, but that's tricky. I don't recommend that one, because the company, like in most countries, that company needs to prove that there's not a Serbian capable of doing the job that you're trying to get.
It's so like Canada, I don't recommend that one, then.
Although it's, yeah, most countries actually work in that way. Mexico is the same. And the way that the one that I recommend, but you need some capital, it's buying real estate, which is what I did. I bought an apartment here for just 12,000 euros. And this is golden information for people interested in moving to Serbia, because most countries offer a residence program for people who buy real estate, but usually there's always a minimum. Most countries start at $100,000, something like that, the equivalent in their local currency. I know for a fact I went recently to Monerocon in Prague, and I know for a fact that Uruguay, which is a very interesting country, very safe country and prosperous, it's known as the Switzerland of South America. But you can get a residence there by buying real estate, but the minimum is $380,000. So Serbia, the beautiful thing about Serbia, it's there's no minimum, as far as I know. As long as you can live in that property, as far as I know, there's no minimum. So I just bought a flat for 12,000 euros again. I had to do some work in that. It was not in a very good shape, let's say, but that was enough for me to get my residence. So you need to prove that you own a property in case you do it in that way, which is the one that I recommend. Then you need insurance for a year. I think it's 200 euros a year. You need to pay some taxes, again, like something like 200 euros per year. And you need a bank statement with at least 500 euros, which I think is ridiculous when you think about it. I recommend to have way more than that. I recommend to have something like 2,000, because they want to see that you're able they want to see that you have some money and you're able to survive here. They don't want any burden or anything. And that's it. That's all you need. And I recommend, if you decide to move here and you decide to go for the residence, I recommend to hire a lawyer. They're not expensive, because Serbia in general, it's not an expensive country. I would say the cost of living is pretty much the same as in Mexico, pretty much the same. Wages are pretty much the same. So it's not an expensive country. That's another benefit, another bonus. And you get the residence for a year. It's a temporary residence. And it takes 5 years to get your permanent residence. You have to renew every year. And after 5 years, you get your permanent residence, which is what I'm trying to get. It's only 2.5 years for me, and I'll get there, hopefully, fingers crossed.
And then what's the process for citizenship after that you know of?
Yeah, so that's also another thing that I want to do, because I only have one passport at the moment. And as you may know, it's not a good idea to just have one passport in these days equals no passport. Two passports equals one passport, in my opinion. So ideally, you should aim to get 3. But yeah, I'm trying to get the Serbian passport. Naturalization, it's a process that takes extra time. So in my case, that's another 3 years, I understand it's a long time. For people who have money, I will recommend them to buy something in the Caribbean, because you can buy a passport there for $100 or $150,000. But if you have time, if you don't have that kind of money and you have time, Serbia, you can get a passport after you get your permanent residence. You can get your passport for after 3 years. when it comes to the details, I'm not 100% sure because I had this conversation with two different lawyers and they gave me different information. But I know it's possible. They allow for dual citizenship. And yeah, that's what I can tell.
Nice. So the process of owning property and buying property, I know in Mexico, they want you to have like residency and stuff first, but you're saying you get residency by buying property. So that's to imply that basically anybody could just go there and buy property. Is there restrictions like there is in Mexico? Like, you know, foreigners can't buy along the coast or something like that.
Right. Yeah. So when it comes to Mexico, I know back in the days, foreigners were not allowed to buy anything close to the beach, near to the beach. I think that changed, although I'm not 100% sure, but I think that changed recently. But in Serbia, correct. Yeah. Yeah. Some countries, they require you to get a residence first so you can buy real estate, which in my opinion, it's counterproductive. I think it's a difficult thing when they behave like that, when they ask you to be a residence first, because how are you going to get your residence in the first place? It's a lot more work, in my opinion. Serbia, you can even open a bank account without being a resident. It will have some restrictions. You will be able to use that bank account only for buying things at the supermarket, but yeah, you're not going to be able to transfer money to residents in Serbia. Or buy a car or a house, or, you know, you're not going to be allowed. That's a bank account that's not basically, it's called non-residential bank account. So you need to get a residence here and renew that residence so you can get a bank account for residence. But the good thing about, so I'm actually lying because when I bought this apartment, I remember I made a wire. Yeah, I made a wire for 8,000 and I paid the difference in cash. So here's the thing. If you are thinking about buying something above 15,000 euros, they will ask you for proof of funds. Proof of funds, they will ask you the usual, right? Like you will have to prove where did the money come from, and it can be a pain in the ass. So it is possible, but I recommend people to start slow and test the waters and move from there. So as far as I know, Serbia allows people to buy property. Serbia allows foreigners to buy property in the country only if there is like a reciprocity, meaning if Serbians are allowed to buy property in Mexico, then as a Mexican, I can buy property here, or whatever you are from. There must be reciprocity between those countries. That's what I know for a fact. And yeah, that is the only restriction I will say. I think Serbia is a very friendly country. Most countries can visit Serbia without a visa. I don't need a visa to. I have 3 months. Like I'm a resident right now, but when I came, I didn't need a visa, which is unfair when I think about it because Serbians need a visa to visit Mexico. But just to give you an idea of how friendly they are and how open they are with foreigners, most people speak English here, so no issues with that. And yeah.
Okay. One thing I wanted to talk on is like the politics situation as well as police. You know, like when I talk to people I know about Serbia, their first thing is like, isn't that like a war-torn country, more dangerous than Mexico? I've actually had people say that to me recently, and I want to know what your opinion on that is. And you and I have talked a little bit about like police compared to like Mexico, so I wanted to get your opinion here on that.
Yeah. Sure. So yeah, when you have like a cheap country, where the cost of living is relatively affordable, you should ask yourself why is that the case, right? Why is it that Switzerland is so expensive and they also have an extremely high quality of life? Why is it that that's a smart question. So in the case of Serbia, yeah, properties are not that expensive. The cost of living is not that expensive, but that is because it's far from perfect. And yes, there is a conflict with Kosovo for those who know, that conflict has been going on for decades now, for years, and it's still going on, which is a concern, of course, for me, because I have my chips in this country and I'm hoping for the best, planning for the worst, but hoping for the best. Yeah, it will be a shame if that conflict escalates, but I mean, it's always a possibility. It's hard for me to tell what's going to happen in the coming years. But yeah, that conflict, it's still going on. Serbians don't recognize Kosovo as an independent state, although most countries do. Most countries recognize Kosovo. They have their own passport. And that's one of, I mean, the conflict with Kosovo, it's linked basically with the bombings that happened in the 90s. It's a very complicated story. I'm not an expert in that. I know something about that because I've been here for 3 years. I had a chance to talk to people who lived during those years. But that conflict is still going on. So it's something that people who are deciding to move to this, people who decide to move to this country, they should bear that in mind. That's why, again, I don't recommend people, if they decide to move here and looking for a place where they can have more freedom at a relatively high, with good quality of life, but not super expensive. That's why I don't recommend them to buy like something super expensive here, because Belgrade, the capital, they have very nice properties right now. It's growing, it's booming. Real estate is booming in Belgrade. You should keep that in mind. The possibility of a war, it's still there. When it comes to the police, you know, I'm an anarchist. I basically hate them. They're very similar. I mean, cops are, sorry, but most of them, they're assholes in most countries. I mean, they're similar to cops in Mexico. I had pretty bad experiences with them in the past because that's what they do, you know? They like to create problems. In Serbia, I will say they are more invasive. They can be more invasive than in Mexico, I will say. Maybe a little bit less evil, but more invasive in the sense that if they find you, let's say you have a speed ticket and you don't pay your fine, they will go to your house to look for you. That's something that they will do. Unlike in Mexico. In Mexico, maybe they do that if there's like a warrant for you, but for a speed ticket, they don't do that in Mexico, as far as I know. I never heard of such a thing. Whereas here, they do that. So they're more invasive, but slightly less evil than in Mexico, but still cops, you know, if I can avoid them, every time I see them, I just completely ignore them. I don't make eye contact because I'm a legal resident here, but I just don't like them. Another thing, it's very common that this is something that never happened to me in Mexico, maybe for obvious reasons, because I look Mexican, of course, but I heard from foreigners who experienced this with cops, people who look like completely like foreigners. Cops in Mexico, they can stop them to ask for their documents to see if they've been like overextending their legal stay in the country. They do that the same. They do the same in Serbia. That happened to me already twice in just 3 years. They stopped me for no reason, just to ask for my documents to see if I'm a legal resident here or for how long I've been living here. And that is part of the reason why I don't like them. Of course, that is very, very invasive. Because they scan you, right? If you don't look like Serbian, like they assume you're not from here. And that's like a very uncomfortable thing, you know. But, you know, again, no country is perfect. And the people, I will say, for the most part, most of them, they're very nice people. It's a completely different culture than in Mexico, I will say. There's, unfortunately, also a little bit of a communist mentality. We can talk about that if you want to go that route. You will see also, unfortunately, some commies, because they had that past. They were under some kind of communism in the past. But for the most part, I will say, at least the people that I know, they're very, very nice people.
I mean, you mentioned it, so why not expand what you mean on the communist? Like, how does that manifest in the population, you know?
Right. So It's interesting because, of course, I'm an anarcho-capitalist. This is one thing that I know. I know communism doesn't work. I know it's one of the most stupid and evil ideas ever created. And it's like every time I find a commie, I just avoid them. Like I have an allergy against communism because I just consider them like it's again a very stupid idea. You cannot argue with facts, against facts. It's just, you just can't do that. These people don't like to look at the facts. They don't like to look at the most richest and prosperous countries and how they're extremely capitalist. And when you look at the real communism, like in Cuba, which I had the chance to visit, when they look at Venezuela, they just, for some reason, they don't believe that's communism. They don't even understand their own concept. That's the thing. So, Serbia, and I know this because I had a conversation with a commie that I used to consider a friend because he was actually my lawyer when I came to the country. I didn't know he had like communist ideas, but he's a very nice guy, very, very nice guy. He helped me to get my residence when I moved here. Eventually, I found another lawyer because of this particular situation, but And here's the thing, some people back in the days of Tito, who was like a ruler in this country, he was a communist. It was a communist regime, as in most Eastern countries. Like this, I mean, Serbia was not part of the URS, Soviet Union, but it's still, there was a lot of similarities, let's say. Yeah, so here's the thing. Some people who still remember those days, they remember those days with some kind of nostalgia. Some people miss those days, believe it or not. And the reason why is very simple. A lot of people, people who support communism, those people got free houses from the government, from the Communist Party. So it sounds like on the surface, very nice, right? Like, okay, you get a house, you don't have to work for that house. The state provides you a house. You don't have to work like 40 years as today in most countries for just to buy a house. Sounds good on the surface, but the thing they don't realize is that those houses were stolen from other people who had like a lot of houses. That's the thing they don't realize. And I will never support that. Some people believe that communism worked here because it wasn't as bad as Cuba or Venezuela. And that is true. It wasn't, they didn't have those levels of poverty, but there's no way I can ever support something like that. Like stealing from other people to give to those who don't have, like, I will never support that. So I advocate free markets. I will always advocate free markets. And yeah, you will find still here some people who remember those days and support communism, unfortunately, but that's the reason why. It's because they benefited from the Communist Party. But whereas if you talk to people who got properties from them stolen, of course they will never support something like that. So that's the thing. Serbia is quite an interesting country for those who like to study more about communism and capitalism because of that particular. So I heard from people who live back in those days that yeah, most companies were owned by the state, but somehow you were allowed to have a business. So it wasn't as bad as in Cuba or Venezuela, but still, again, a communist party. And I'm just hoping that people will remember the consequences of, you know, it's very funny when you think about Germany, for example. It's a very, very good question that you can ask is like when the Berlin Wall fell, like a very good question to ask is from where did people move? From what side did people move to the other side? Like, and the answer is very obvious. Like people moved from the communist part to the capitalist part of Germany. So like, you see, like it's really, this is not really a debate. This shouldn't be something that is up for debate. But again, when people benefit from a communist party, that you may find some of them who actually support that, you know, but again, it is what it is.
So a few things. The first thing I'll say is that, like, one of the things that I consistently bring up is Western hegemony. And I bring up the fact that, you know, the state capitalist empire has been spreading its way across the globe. And like this, you know, around the globe influence of like these sorts of business minded governments that Murray Rothbard talked about, too, from an ANCAP perspective, talking about the fact that if you have anarcho-capitalism, it's an alternative to existing state capitalist models. The like Western hegemony has created a lot of the instability that you will see in places like Mexico and Serbia. Like Venezuela isn't like Mexico, but like it's also an example. Cuba is also an example. The sanctions put on both of those countries and the influence and regime change from Western powers and their neoliberal allies has been huge. So that is like an interesting thing to note, especially like the parallels that exist with Serbia, where Bill Clinton launched a massive bombing campaign of Kosovo and Serbia that lasted a really long time. And also like basically had a puppet president in the region who got charged by the International Criminal Court in The Hague with like war crimes. Because like when the state capitalist interference takes root, somehow the presidents there are brutal dictators as well. So it's not like you get rid of them commies and suddenly like the capitalist nations are awesome. And the reason, you know, the reason Berlin Wall was even like considered was because the state had basically created interference circumstances there as well and had supported whatever powers they could in the region. So like it's one of those instances where it's good to remember that it's like not in a vacuum, and that the reason they might have a housing transfer program like that, which does rely on theft, might be a similar reason why they might need to, like, you know, get some from BlackRock and Vanguard, who are huge real estate moguls and own a huge amount of real estate in the US. Like, there's a limited amount of resources and housing in cities. And if mega corporations, which are heavily like profiting off state action anyway, are hoarding houses, then it might be something where like these mega corporations, hedge funds, those sorts of things, which benefit off of like the statist action to begin with, have played a statist game and won a statist prize. And as Konkin, the guy behind Agorism, would say, you know, like, corporations are just extensions of the state. They are extensions of state power. So I'm not saying I endorse that like housing program, because I don't know about that housing program. But what I will say is that there might be some complicated nuance here, not the least of which is that like the West and its allies have shelled the region for a long time. And there might just be people who need houses who can't get access to them otherwise.
Yeah, yeah, for sure. I believe there is a lot of problems with the current system that we have in most countries. But to believe that the solution is communism, I think it's just preposterous. Unfortunately, that seems to be the trend. When you look at the motto of the World Economic Forum, you will own nothing and you will be happy. I mean, that unfortunately seems to be the trend. So that's why I think I decided to invest my time, and thanks for having me again for in this podcast. But that's why I decided to invest my time doing this, because I believe it's important for people to understand the danger of communism and understand that this is basically the direction that we're heading. And so it's up to us. It's up to us to not take it, basically, and stand up. And that's what I believe.
For sure. Well, Yeah, and to be absolutely clear, I don't endorse state anything, much less state communism. But the World Economic Forum is an interesting case because it's like, you know, international billionaires and bank executives and mega corporate allies and all this stuff. And they say you will own nothing and you will be happy, but they don't say anything about them because it's not about them. They're not going to give up their state capitalist property. They're not actually communists if they say they are. They're like, they say communism for thee and not for me. Like, it's yeah. It's a way to placate the workers while having a veneer of some sort of, like, you know, revolution or whatever. But, like, ultimately, they're going to keep making their money. They're going to keep controlling their blocks.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, they're the ones trying to make the rules, so they don't play by the rules.
Yeah, like, it's like Elon Musk, where he says, like, ooh, free speech, but I'm going to censor literally everyone I don't like, and I'm going to then limit the amount of tweets people can read. And, you know, I hate government, but, like, give me... Elon Musk participates in an interestingly similar way to that housing thing, because he gets what are called regulatory credits, where he will get, like, literally... money from the government that they stole from auto manufacturers who aren't, like, doing the environmental goals. So he benefits from the woke he claims to hate. He benefits from this sort of property transfer where these companies aren't following the government's regulations. So the government takes their money and gives it to Elon Musk so that he can run, like, Tesla and SpaceX and shit. And then, like, they give him huge grants and like subsidies, so that he can run Tesla's and SpaceX as well, build Starlink satellites to cover the world in surveillance technology that will, like, break in 5 years. You know, so it's one of those things where, like, these things are basically just, they're a state problem, and the economic model of the state doesn't really matter. The state is what the root of the problem is.
Yep, I agree. Couldn't agree more with that.
Yeah.
Well, there's one thing that's kind of like a switching of the gears that I wanted to talk about, and it's actually something that probably in the next 24 hours, my latest Agorist Nexus article will be coming out. But it's about stoicism, because, like, the majority of anarchists that I meet are, well, not the majority, but a lot of them are very much, like, just very angry, confrontational, you know,
people
in general. I wasn't going to say that, but I mean a little. but Marcus is actually the first, like, anarchist, agorist type person who... I know that's talked about stoicism, and the more that I looked into it, the more that I, you know, I've already kind of been living by it. Like, it seems to be a philosophy that's not just about talking about shit. It's like, hey, let's put some shit into practice and try to live a good life despite all of the bad that's in the world. So tell us a little bit about stoicism and how you arrived to that from where you were at before, which I know is, you know, pretty hardcore Christianity.
Right. So, yeah, I discovered stoicism at the moment that I needed it the most. That was back in, 2017. At that point, so I was a Christian. I was a Christian for pretty much my whole life. My family, they are all Christians, and you know, I did it because it was like what my family was doing, and but I never felt like it was something for me. And the thing is, I believe you need something, you need like some kind of a North Star, let's say. And yeah, again, I discovered Ryan Holiday. I discovered his book back in 2017. The Daily Stoic, highly recommended for anyone listening. And yeah, it made an impact in my life. And it's funny because if you go to my Twitter, you will see in my bio, I identify as a Stoic and as an anarcho-capitalist. And I had this conversation with a friend like a few months ago. I was explaining how I'm both things. I'm both a Stoic and an anarcho-capitalist, and she was puzzled because she was familiar with both things, and she was puzzled, and she asked me, like, is it possible to be both things? And I say, of course, why? But that got me thinking, like, why is it that she believed that it's not possible to be both things? And these two philosophies of way or ways of living are by no means like in contradiction, because being an ANCAP, it's all about understanding the dangers of communism and how regulation basically reduces your quality of life, and how the maximum potential when we have free markets. That's basically why I'm an anarcho-capitalist. But being a Stoic, it's all about understanding that there will always in our lives, we will always have things that we just cannot control. That's, I will say, that's the foundation of Stoicism. It's understanding the difference. Stoicism helps you to recognize the difference between what you can control and what you cannot control. So as a matter of fact, back in 2019, my plan before moving to Serbia was to move to Canada. I was getting ready to leave the country anyway, but I was going to move to Canada to study there. And then COVID hit. And so I had to adjust. And that is a very good example that, like, Canada closed the borders. Like, I was already, I got admitted in the college in Vancouver, but they closed the border. So that was outside of my control, but I had to focus on what was in my control. And Serbia was an option. It was in my control to move to Serbia. And that's what I did. And I highly recommend Stoicism to anyone. It's the one thing that I can recommend blindly to anyone. And they have four cardinal virtues, and those being courage, temperance, wisdom, and justice. And out of those four, the one that I struggle the most, and just to answer the question, the one that I struggle the most is definitely temperance. It's a difficult one because when you see all the bullshit that is going on, all the psyops that we have these days, and how people don't wake up and it is their life. I mean, we cannot control other people's lives because that's something that is outside of our control. But unfortunately, we get affected by them, because if their compliance is somehow affecting your life. And so, again, temperance, it's the one that I will say that I struggle the most. But again, I try always to focus on the things that are in my control, and worrying about if there is going to be a war or if there is going to be another psyop. Like, having, like, that will never help you in any way. Being worried about the future events, it's of no help. And I believe it's much more productive and much more efficient way of living when you just, instead of worrying, you just focus on those things that you can control, and you just strategize and build your life around that.
Yeah, well, intemperance is an interesting one, given what you said earlier, because it sounds like if Serbians practice that a bit more, that they would be, like, healthier in general. Like, if one of the things that, like, catches me a significant amount of flack in anarchist circles, specifically right-wing anarchist circles right now, because they're upset at me for a variety of reasons, is that I'm promoting clean sobriety. And I believe that to be a key, like, sort of foundational principle of temperance, is that you have a clear mind and you're restraining yourself and, like, using self-control to prevent yourself from indulging in the kinds of things that are going to destroy you, or, like, you know, the kinds of things that are going to cause dependence cycles. And so when I tell people that they should stop drinking, stop doing drugs, stop smoking, they act like I'm being some weird religious, like, conservative in some spaces. And they act like I'm being some, like, you know, holier than thou prude in others. And it largely depends. Like, you know, fucking a transphobe like a month ago was very angry at me because I said I was not going to argue with him at that particular juncture. I was out working out and I was out for a run and touching grass. And he said I should smoke it instead. And I said, you know, no, I'm clean and sober. And that very much upset him because it implied that his marijuana use was not clean. And he didn't like that. People don't like being told that, hey, yeah, you're doing this thing because it makes you feel fucking great. And it's an artificial substance you're using to feel fucking great that was crafted to be max potential of feeling fucking great. And you're using it as an escapist way to get away from things. And you shouldn't pretend it's not a drug or that you're clean while you're smoking so much fucking weed that you can't even, like, appreciate somebody going outside without bringing it up. So, like, I think there's a significant problem in many circles and in many places with, instead of waking up, instead of being wise to the system, getting on some sort of substance, like, you know, it's a place that I criticize the right in because they're huge in, like, you know, tobacco lobbies, huge in booze lobbies, like Rush Limbaugh being all like, oh yeah, this war on drugs, these Mexican cartels, etc. And then he dies of lung cancer from the cigars he smoked, from the cigars right. He sold. And he's a fat, balding loser with, like, no prospects of health because he's been drinking himself into a coma or, like, abusing prescription pills. This guy's clearly the guy we should be listening to. But, like, also, there's a lot of drugged out lefties too, where they're like, you know, they're drugged out and they're following somebody who said that religion is the opium of the people. I mean, maybe, but you know what else is opium? Opium. Maybe they should stay off drugs, and, like, keep their brains clear and not, like, fuck up their minds so that they can escape. You know, maybe that's the first step, is having that firm foundation, having those roots. And it sounds like a lot of Serbians could maybe use that so that they rise up against their oppression instead of smoking their day away and just using things to tolerate it.
Yeah, you know, going back to the tolerance thing, that's one thing that I had to, work on a lot when I moved here, because there's no way you can go to a restaurant and enjoy a meal without having people next to you smoking. There's no such a thing as a smoking area in Serbia, at least not in 99% of the restaurants, I will say.
Welcome to Serbia. So, it's a smoking area.
Yeah, there's no such thing. Yeah, exactly. So that's one thing that, I mean, I've been struggling to adapt. Let's say even after 3 years, it's still a difficult thing. But it's their culture, you know. I cannot just come here and expect everyone to change, like, just because of me. It's not going to happen. And sure. It is what it is. Like, I love things like the freedom that they have, but it's, again, far from perfect. And one thing that I personally don't like, it's the fact that they smoke, like, nonstop, and they don't care about you. They don't care if you don't like it. They will still smoke, you know? And so, again, that's the reason why the masks never work here. Because think about it. How the fuck are you going to smoke with a mask on? And I'm telling you, seriously, they smoke nonstop, the whole day, nonstop. So, yeah, I mean, it is what it is.
Sure, yeah.
It's a double-edged sword, I will say.
Yeah, yeah. It double-edged is a good word for it, because, like, sure, maybe they're doing it because they're not afraid, but also I'm not going to take health advice from them.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah, that's a good point.
Yeah, and as somebody, like, we talked about this in other episodes, I'm somebody who recently celebrated a year off of cannabis. So I've lived on both sides of the coin of what Jeremy's talking about. The one side is like, you know, I was definitely like, everybody could stand to smoke a little bit of weed, you know. Like, I wasn't the type that would pressure people or shame them, but I was definitely like, if somebody was uptight, it's like, well, they need to go smoke a joint, you know. But now being on the other side of that, like, it really was a distraction for, and I wrote an article about this, it really was a distraction to keep me complacent with things that, you know, were going on in my life. And in some regards, like, maybe it helped, but like in the majority of it, it like kept me in cycles that weren't serving me. You know, I'm an illegal in another country because I have charges related to it. And I used to use, oh, I need it for chronic pain. Well, the chronic pain went away. Okay, I need it for my anxiety. Well, I quit smoking and oddly enough, quit having panic attacks. My dad, my whole life, the big thing that he always said was too much of anything is not good. And I've struggled with that as well, but it's more with things like sugar and with cannabis and with, like, you know, too much of the quote unquote good things, as we would say in life. And there really is something to be said about balance and not just overindulging just because, you know, let's have a pleasurable life and have fun while we're here. Well, like, why not try to extend our stay of a pleasurable life? Because as far as I'm concerned, my grandpa died from COPD. My dad's in the beginning stages of COPD and emphysema. Living, not really being able to breathe, doesn't really sound like a, you know, fun way to live, if you ask me. And that's literally where chronic, especially tobacco use, like, it's less common with weed smokers for sure, but like, especially tobacco use, like, it doesn't compute.
yeah, and you know, like, that's one of the that when you get into some of the like right-wing corruption, like the Koch brothers are huge in tobacco lobbies, like really pushing, and when you start to realize that there's some overlap there between tobacco lobbyists and conservative media, you start to realize that maybe they shouldn't be speaking for the health of people either, because like, they're pushing a lot of the same garbage. They're pushing a lot of the same mentalities. And that's the reason it was okay for Rush Limbaugh to smoke a cigar and have secret pill use and tell us all that we should be better with our bodies while he like grew dilapidated and eventually died of his own excess.
Right. Yeah. Cool. Hear more with that.
But yeah, like see, because I'm not a stoic, I'm a cynic. And one of the reasons I'm a cynic, like, other than it lets me be a cunt and get away with it, is that the cynic mentality is like trying to find all the holes, trying to find all the little places in people's sort of philosophy and mentalities and expose that. And try to live as anathema to the sort of social structure and control as possible while still making my points. Like, you know, Diogenes is famous for plucking a chicken and throwing it at Plato because he said that a man is defined as a featherless biped. And so he said that's not a good definition. And he threw a plucked chicken at him and said, "Behold, I have brought you a man. Behold, Plato's man." And so then he redefined it. Plato redefined it to with broad, flat nails. So it's one of those things where, like, if your goal is to expose other people's intellectual flaws or find all your own intellectual flaws and expose them until you drill down to like the bare essentials, a lot of things come to light, not the least of which is that I don't want my head to be clouded, because then I might sink into the same garbage that I criticize other people for.
Right. Yeah, I can touch a little bit on that. The Stoics, the Cynics, the Epicureans, those are very, very old schools. Like, and a lot of people don't know this, but the Stoics are actually old. I mean, the philosophy, it's older than Christianity. It's older than the Christians. Actually, they're mentioned in the Bible, the Stoics and the Book of Acts, I believe, they're mentioned there. And what I can say about this is that if your philosophy, or even if your religion, for that matter, makes you a better person, more power to you. Actually, I was listening to a podcast a few hours ago about a numerologist that I follow, highly recommended, GG33 on Twitter. You can find him. And he was having a debate with a Muslim. And Gary agrees, this guy, he agrees with a lot of Islam. He doesn't drink. He doesn't cheat on his wife, but not because of Allah, but because that's the way he lives. And he doesn't need a Quran to just be like that, to be a good person. So, but if you are the type of person that needs that kind of religion and that kind of fear of a supreme being, I mean, in that makes you a better person as a result, then again, more power to you. Nothing against that. And that's the reason, going back to the communism thing, that's the reason why I will never support communism, because they interact with your free will. You know, like if your religion makes you a better person, then great. But if you want to throw that religion through my throat against my will, then we have a problem. And the same for communism. If you want me to share what I work for just because you want, then we have a problem. And so, yes, I believe all interactions should be voluntary among people, among individuals. And again, I live by the non-aggression principle. And whatever works for you, either if it's philosophy, as it is for me, with Stoicism, or if you practice a religion that makes you a better person, then nothing against that.
Yeah, well, like my whole deal, I will definitely like join you in opposing state communism. If I support any sort of them, it's going to be more like, you know, the Bakunin school. Like, there's a very interesting thing, like, speaking of The Hague, before it was like the whole ICC thing, the general vibe of early like communism was that there were some schisms, there were some debates, let's just say. And one of the things that happened was Marx accused fellow communist Bakunin, Mikhail Bakunin, of being a spy and kicked him out of the union. And the reason he did this was not because there was any evidence that Bakunin was a spy, but because Bakunin was saying, hey, we shouldn't have an interstitial state. It's only going to create a new class, a new group of people who control the means of production. And we shouldn't try to use the state as our intermediary. We should just do anarchy and live as well as we can. And then, like, when he got kicked out, he, like, literally, like, he wrote this entire book against Marx, against the way that he had been running things, because he's like, yeah, you know what? Marx's ideas haven't really turned out that well when put into practice. And so it's a very interesting read, if anyone wants to read it. It's called Statism and Anarchy, and it's about basically how if you want, like, the promise of communism to be like successful, you can't do that with a state, and you need to start with like the actual people power. Otherwise, it's just going to like eventually trend into the same sorts of oppressive structures they claimed they wanted to fight. I think you might find that guy a lot more approachable than Marx.
Oh yeah, absolutely.
So as long as somebody is an authentic and calm, I generally have no problem with that sort of person. As long as they're willing to fight the state wherever it is, I will fight alongside them. I'm the whole bottom strip on the political compass. I'll fight with, like, I'll fight alongside like ANCAPs, ANCOMs, mutualists, egoists, individualists, transhumanists, even. Although most of them don't like me because I'm relatively anti-tech. I think that we're heading for a technocratic dystopia and fundamental evil is on the horizon.
Yeah. Yeah. We can go deep down into that rabbit hole. It can, maybe that's something for another day, but yeah, when you touch on Elon Musk, and I know that you may know this as well, that his family was part of a technocrat party. So
yeah,
there's that.
In Canada, and then they fucking move like down here, and now we're just supposed to think that they're on our side, guys. They're not gonna try to be hyper controlling state capitalists. So wait, that's what Elon Musk is, but free speech or something,
right? Yeah,
let's give a few people their Twitter accounts back and call it a day.
Yeah, and then take away other people's because they said mean things to Elon. Anyway, so, okay, well then actually, yeah, I wouldn't mind having you back on to discuss the issues of technocracy and the slowly ballooning corporate state, because I'm sure that there's much ground to cover. But yeah, we are bellying up on, we're doing a Jitsi recording, seeing how the open source software can work for us. And I think it has an hour and a half time limit. So we're like, we're going to see how the quality is on this. Y'all can let us know. But basically, when this recording is out, it's going to have been recorded on open source software instead of Zoom or Skype. So it'll be an interesting experiment, especially since we've talked about Jitsi in articles on agorasnexus.com before. So is there anything else you wanted to say before booking?
How can we find you on Twitter?
Yeah, sure.
Yeah, you can follow me on Marcus_365. That's the social media that I'm using at the moment. And yeah, I'm happy to, thanks for having me. Thanks a lot for having me. And sure, I'm up for another conversation. Absolutely, I will love it.
Sounds like a plan. Is there anything else you want to say, Lily?
No, but I actually prepared a quote for today for once. I know, cool. Shocking. Should I go for it?
Go for it.
All right, so the quote for today is from Dread Pirate Roberts, or Ross Ulbricht as we know him. Every action you take outside the scope of government control strengthens the market and weakens the state.
Love it.
Very cool. Agoras Nexus out.
The revolution starting inside, an instrumental part of Agora Worldwide. Agora Worldwide, Agora Worldwide. Counter economics, agorist drip. Black market click, move a quick flip. Can't regulate this, agorist drip. Black market click, move a quick flip. Can't regulate this,